Was I really sounding that testy? Was I getting too testy? Was that it?
You were getting a little bit aggressive for a bit there.
Was it the kid or the hiatus from marijuana? That's the question.
Probably a little bit of both with some COVID exacerbations mixed in.
Yes, yes. I've got my my fill of vitamin D this summer, so maybe that's bringing my vibes up as well.
What are you drinking tonight, today?
I'm drinking some Claws. I've got to go to a dinner after we record. Late dinner, 9:30 dinner tonight.
Interesting, very European.
Yeah, got to ease into it.
Do you realize that it's a celebratory episode today?
Holy shit, is this the anniversary of our first episode?
It's our two-year anniversary.
Holy shit.
To the day. To the day. It was August 20th, 2018, was the first RHR, episode 40.
That makes sense.
Tales from the Crypt.
Because we did it on a Wednesday, didn't we, or a Tuesday? We started in, like, the beginning of the week.
I don't know, but the crazy part is that it was August 20th.
Yeah.
When I looked it up. I just looked it up coincidentally, and I was like, oh, my fucking God. It's been 2 years every week. I think we skipped that 1 week we felt bad about.
Yeah, it was like a Christmas break week or something like that.
But we had some doubles to make up for it.
Yes, yes.
The stimulus apps.
We expanded our episode monetary base during COVID.
The first RHR was episode 40. When you interviewed me was episode 20. And yesterday's episode that we dropped with Leishman was 186, but all the numbers are fucked up now because RHR isn't included in the numbers. So we're really like way over 200.
Two,
so cheers to that.
200, yes, and all. Yeah, cheers to you. Cheers to us, brother. It's been a great great 2 years. It flew by. Holy shit.
Cheers to the freaks.
Cheers to you freaks, too, for subjecting yourselves to this show. Here's to many more years, not just two.
Fuck yes. Lower your time preference.
I can't believe we haven't done it in person in quite a while.
Where we're going to next week.
Oh, yes. Oh, shit. So we're going to do a Friday drop?
I don't know what we should do because we're recording on Saturday at Bit Block Boom. So maybe we hit them with a double. I don't know.
Yeah, is that a stimulus package? Yeah.
This is classic Matt and Marty deciding on air what we're going to do because we didn't talk about it yet.
Yeah, we're very from the hip show here.
We could do like a Tuesday app and a Saturday app because it might be a little bit ridiculous to do like a Thursday app and then fly out to Dallas and then do a Saturday app. It's a little bit ridiculous.
I like that. I like that. And I'm sure there'll be plenty of news between now and next Tuesday to wrap about. There's actually some news that's not on the list now that is developing that may be more clear come Tuesday. So we can chat about that then, certainly. 2 years. 2 years. It's crazy.
It feels like both yesterday and a fucking decade ago.
What block was Bitcoin at? We have to find that out. August 20th.
How are you going to find that out, Marty?
You can search on blockstream.info. It has like good search parameters where you could, but I don't think I had the time to go there.
How about this? Freaks. August 20th.
2018.
First person to post in the Twitter comments what block that was.
50,000 sats.
What are you going to give them?
50,000 sats. Screw
50,000 sats. I was going to give them a shout out on the next podcast, but you can get both 50,000 sats and a shout out on the next podcast.
Yeah, over the Lightning Network. Send us an invoice and we'll send you 50,000 sats. Include it in the tweet. If you don't include it in the tweet, you're not getting the sats, so...
You don't have to include it in the tweet.
This is true.
Because if you need to put like routing hints or whatever, and it's going to get delayed, that's not Marty's just adding extra requirements. If you get the
block height first,
then you win.
Okay, I agree. I don't want to muff up anybody's privacy. What if nobody answers? What if nobody cares enough?
If no one answers, then we're 50,000 sats richer.
Yes.
And we'll have to look it up for next episode. And we'll tell the freaks what block height it was.
Yeah, we'll purchase 50,000 sats. Speaking of block height, according to Clark Moody's dashboard. We are currently at block height 644,595. The price of Bitcoin is $11,872. That's 8,426 sats per dollar. We are between difficulty adjustments, 525 blocks away from the next one. We're always between difficulty adjustments unless we're like recording during the block that the adjustment happens. But we are 525 blocks away from the next one, which is estimated to be on August 24th. So that is 4 days from now. Next Monday. Estimated to be a 3.2% increase.
My new favorite stat, the Samurai Whirlpool unspent capacity.
1,361.86 Bitcoin at the moment.
I've been tracking that lately. Also, I'm calling it a liquidity pool now because that's what the cool kids are. They're all obsessed with their liquidity pools. Mm-hmm. So the Samurai Whirlpool liquidity pool.
We're farming privacy.
Yeah, we're farming privacy. The it was at 1182 Bitcoin on 1,182 Bitcoin on August 10th, and now it's at 1361. So that's a nice little increase. That number's been going up.
That's 15 to 20% between there. It's pretty good increase in 3 weeks.
Not too shabby.
Not too shabby at all.
With 10 days.
10 days. The fees right now, if you're looking to get into the next block, make sure you have 142 sat per byte transaction, hour 136, and then if you're willing to wait a day, you can pay 3 sats per byte. So keep that in mind as you're moving your Bitcoin, spending your Bitcoin. 23% of the network is running Bitcoin Core version 0.20.0. The GBTC premium is currently at around 15%, and the QBTC.U premium is around 23.6%. That's a Canadian version of GBTC, correct?
Oh, I have no idea.
Pretty sure.
Publicly
traded security that tracks a Bitcoin portfolio's field is the premium.
Does it have dot U?
Yes, it's Canada. It's Canada.
Yeah, dot U is Canada.
Right now, one Bitcoin is worth 6.1 ounces of gold. It is 1.74% of the total gold market cap. And Bitcoin, one Bitcoin will buy 280 barrels of oil. As it stands right now. Shout out to Clark.
Can you store that on a cold card?
No, you can't. You can't.
Rodolfo, when oil support cold card.
Yeah, he just sends you a cold card. Just turns into huge ass barrels. Check out the Rodolfo square on your bingo boards, freaks.
The mistake was letting us know what the bingo board said.
Yeah. And the GBTC premium may be off. I'm checking the status of Clark's
data. Doesn't matter.
Data feeds.
Do you own any GBTC?
No, but I actually had somebody, NoCoiner, reach out to me asking about it. And so if you guys don't know GBTC, we've talked about it plenty of times, but hey, there may be some new freaks here. GBTC is a way for people to get access to Bitcoin via their brokerage's accounts, but it's a very illiquid product. They have 12-month lockups, and it trades at a premium to the Bitcoin price, usually ranging between anywhere between 5 to 40%, depending on where the price of Bitcoin is. Again, right now it's around 15%.
And it's a fake ETF.
Yes.
If when we eventually get a Bitcoin ETF, that premium will disappear overnight.
Yes.
But if you're interested in buying some for whatever reason, you should DM American HODL and he'll walk you through it.
Yes. And historically, the game, if you're trying to trade GBTC, is to play that premium. Buy it when the premium's low, sell it when the premium's high, get in and out. So just be aware. You usually want to do that in a tax deferrable account. If you're,
GBTC is some high time preference bullshit.
It really is.
I mean, they pretend it's low time preference because they say, oh, it's in my retirement account.
Yeah.
But to me, as a Bitcoin holder, I think it's high time preference.
And it makes more sense just to, that's what I told my friend who reached out and asked. I said, yeah, if you want to play that game, trade that ARB, do it. But make sure you have some Bitcoin as well that you actually
real Bitcoin, that you actually not own. Bitcoin that Barry's Silbert is owning for you.
Yeah. Hey, Clark got an advertiser. Hashtag buy them Bitcoins.
It's BitPiggy.
Yeah. Yeah. Shout out to Farface, our boy Farface 2K. FF2K. What up, dude?
You want to hit them with an ad before this becomes a mid-roll?
Well, you just ruined it. You got to segue into... No, we're not doing it. Unless you were looking to get some white glove vault concierge service from our good friends at Unchained Capital. Everything you need for $1,500. All right. Unchained, as you guys know, they've been rolling out their OTC desk. It's in a few states right now, but they're building this white glove service around that and their vault service. And they will help you go from zero to multi-sig in a very smooth, seamless process. Somebody will be holding your hand throughout the whole way. So the white glove concierge service comes with a 1-hour video session with a member of Unchained Capital's concierge team, including step-by-step vault setup instructions and best practice operational security tips. They're going to send you 2 Trezor Model T devices shipped directly from the manufacturer. So, and then when you get those, it'll be a 45-minute session with a member of Unchained's team to configure hardware wallets and understand functionality. And then $1,000 worth of Bitcoin will be deposited to the vault once the vault in the multi-sig is set up. So again, our friends at Unchained Capital are dedicated to providing Bitcoiners with financial services and security products with security first in mindset. They want to do it the correct way, the Bitcoin way. They provide open source tools to the community. The products they use, they give back, they open source it, and they make it so that you can use it without Unchained. That's evidence with their Caravan product. So if you guys are interested in going from zero to multi-sig and having Unchained walk you through this with a white glove handheld service, go to www.unchained-capital.com/the-vault-concierge-onboarding-package. Obviously, I don't expect you to remember that. We will put a link to that specific white glove service in the show notes. And if you just want to check out anything that Unchained Capital is doing beyond the concierge service, just go to unchained-capital.com. That's unchained-capital.com. They've got their vault product, collateralized loan product, and their blog, which is incredible. I actually shared Dhruv Bansal's piece on Bitcoin in space in the concept of center of hash with somebody yesterday, and it was a good refresher to read through that. It's a very interesting one. So if you haven't read that, go check it out. Again, unchained-capital.com. This episode of Rabbit Hole Recap is also brought to you by our good friends at the motherfucking Cash App. Matt, did you see all the dope glow-in-the-dark debit cards that people have been sending us?
I almost bought one. You have to pay $5 to get it. Like, get your card changed.
$5.
I don't care about the $5, but...
Do you know how much money the Fed's printing?
No, but I didn't know, like, you can get glow in the dark, you can get white. I have the black one already, and there's also, like, they have a designer one that's, like, $30 that was done by a specific designer. So I ended up freezing with decision anxiety, and then I didn't purchase anything.
Yeah, decision paralysis?
Yeah.
Well, what we're talking about here is the Boost card, and this is a debit card the Cash App provides you. Acceptable anywhere to Visa is acceptable. You can personalize it. It's connected to your Cash App, and you can go spend money wherever Visa is accepted. And then on top of that, you got their Boost program where you can save at partner merchants. You go to a partner merchants, you hit the Boost, you go, you save money. And then you can stack sats with that. Did you know that about the Cash App, motherfuckers? You can stack sats with the Cash App. It's the easiest place to stack sats. You can stack sats, send sats, receive sats, sell sats if you so please. They're making sats a standard. Matt, you started this trend. We're not buying whole Bitcoins anymore, or we're not buying fractions of Bitcoin. Excuse me. We're buying whole sats. And then on top of that, of course, they have Cash App Investing. You guys have heard the stonk spiel. If you're into stonks, you can go invest in slivers of stonks. Cash App Investing is a subsidiary of Square and member SIPC. As always, when you download the Cash App, when you pick out your boost card, when you start stacking sats via the Cash App, when you download the app, make sure you use the code STACKINGSATS. That's STACKINGSATS. You're going to get $10, and $10 is going to go to our good friends at Owls Lacrosse. That's Owls Lacrosse. Use the code STACKINGSATS, download the Cash App, and pray for that poor owl that just died on my deck.
Not a real owl, PETA. Don't come after us.
I didn't kill it. It just died. It seemed like it.
Marty tried his best to resuscitate it.
It was at the, yeah, I did. I did.
During the episode. Two things there. First of all, I never really pointed this out, but it's kind of funny that we went from fractions of a Bitcoin to whole sats, and then we went from like whole stocks to fractions of stocks.
Right.
Which is ironic. And the other thing we never talked about, I remember it every time we finished the episode, is that we kind of weaseled stacking sats into
Joe Rogan's
podcast because we share a sponsor, and his Cash App read now is stacking sats, which is just, that's pretty awesome. The power of a sponsor right there.
How's that feel for you personally? Joe Rogan's, you know, uttering it, a phrase kind of feels, that you popularize.
It feels like a cheap shot because, you know, we kind of stacking sats like bought its way into the Joe Rogan pod. Like, it'll be a true win when he just says it as a part of his vernacular. Like, when it becomes Joe's lifestyle, that's when we win. But it's a nice little win in the meantime.
It's a very big win, I would say. Bitcoiners have a lot of influence in this world. We do a lot behind the scenes that the mainstream doesn't realize. We got Bitcoin sign guy behind Janet Yellen. We've got people infiltrating banks. We've got, I gave a presentation to a bunch of oil and gas execs today about Bitcoin and mining off of waste gas. There's influence all throughout the space, and Joe Rogan now has to utter words that Matt Odell popularizes. It's pretty sweet. We're staying humble.
To be clear, the freaks and all the Bitcoiners out there popularized it. You know,
they picked up what you were putting down around with it. You know,
damn right. Yeah. Let's fucking go.
Yeah. Speaking of freaks, we got 3 shout-outs this week. First one, I feel like it happened as we were recording last week, because this seems like 2-month-old news at this point. But here we go. Dudes, I haven't even seen the Portnoy Winklevi cringe fest, but fuck them. Portnoy was going for clicks over substance. Bitcoin Marty and Matt Odell would have schooled him proper. Don't ever change, guys. The freaks are on your side.
That feels like years ago now.
Right. Anon. Thank you.
I just want to be clear that I love Dave. I think he's fucking fantastic. Dude is just a special beast. You know, he was trolling the NFL today. He wants the naming rights to the Buffalo Bills Stadium. I mean, we called on this podcast that, of course, he was going to move into shitcoins. He was picking stocks out of Scrabble letters and then just buying whatever the Scrabble letters came up with. Personally, yes, I did come out roaring after the last episode when I actually watched that cringe fest that was that video, but I was really pissed off at the Winklevi twins. You know, I think they were given this platform and I expected more of them. I was disappointed, you know, in them specifically. More. I wasn't disappointed in Portnoy. Like, it is what it is.
Yeah. No, it should be clear too that I have immense amount of respect for Dave Portnoy.
I also blame Marty here. Because Marty had the chance to red pill him properly.
You don't even understand. Think back to the 2017 mania. If you think like buying Link and Orchid or whatever the fuck he was buying last week was something, just think back to 2017 when the ICO craziness was going on. I was literally there just to help set him up. I gave him the advice, like, make sure you protect this.
Don't lose it. He lost his seed, Marty.
He might not have. That's, as you know.
Maybe he has good OPSEC.
He knows how to lean. Yes. But yeah, no, Dave's an inspiration for the bent particularly, and this podcast, show up brick by brick, blog never sleeps, make content. And if you show up every day, maybe you'll have some success in the long run. It's obviously worked out for him. Maybe we can copy that here at TFTC. We'll see.
The other thing that I appreciated about Dave was that, you know, there's a lot of similarities. People are saying like he's this cycle's McAfee. Like McAfee pretended like every shitcoin was like the best shitcoin ever. Like the best thing since sliced bread. But Portnoy came out and he was like, this is a pump and dump. I am trying to pump and dump this shitcoin, and just straight up said it. Now his lawyers have probably reached out to him and told him that most shitcoins fall under securities regulation.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't be surprised. And they've been dumping since he bought them. So I wouldn't be surprised if he has to hold on to them, you know, to alleviate any pump and dump concerns. But I did appreciate that he just specifically said it. He's like, in crypto, we pump and dump.
Yeah. Yeah. I've responded to that video, bold strategy, because Dave, if you're listening, these tokens are susceptible to securities laws. So be careful.
The only one that's definitely not a security is Bitcoin. So yes. if you want to pump one without any kind of repercussion, that's the one to do.
Yes, run with us.
That's not securities advice.
No, it's not. We're not lawyers. Lawyer. We're not investment advisors. This is not advice at all. This is just two dudes shooting the shit.
Exactly.
Now, Dave, you're not meant for prison, all right? Stop. You don't want that. You don't want that. Second shout out. This one's a long one. My Bitcoin story for the freaks. Got married in 2014 and moved to the South for grad school. There, I went down the libertarian rabbit hole, including Austrian econ, sound money, and then Bitcoin. I thought we could use the extra money and having free electricity in our 400 square foot university apartment. I bought as many miners as would fit on our circuits. It was very loud and very hot. Our AC never turned off except during winter, as it couldn't keep up with the miners and the 100 degree days. In total, we mined in these conditions for over 1 year, but the sacrifice has been worth it. I encourage the freaks to reject overconsumption and make sacrifices now to make your family's life better in the future. Bitcoin helps fix this from reasonably long, but it keeps going. P.S. It's ZBD, not ZBD. It's a clever name for Lightning Company. Jesus gave James and John, sons of Zebedee, the name Bonergers. Bonergers spelled B-O-A-N-E-R-G-S. Bonergers. Bonergers. Which means sons of thunder. P.P.S. Stop watching porn. Lift weights. Love Jesus. Start a family. Love you reasonably long. I could co-sign that P.P.S. Don't know what Bonergers is, though.
Very loaded. Very loaded. We love... I'm going to pronounce it wrong. The ZBD team.
Zebedee.
Great work. Zebedee.
Zebedee. Shout out to Andre and team out there. Last and final shout out this week. Grow dank, stack sats, fuck the government and their commie fuckery. And thanks to you guys for the contribution you bring to the movement. Love from South Africa. Shout out to our South African freaks out there. Didn't know we had too many of those.
Cheers.
Yeah.
Fuck yes.
Love you guys. Thank you for the shout outs this week. Love doing those. If you guys want to do them, you can go to tftc.com. We're not at .com. We don't have that kind of money. tftc.io/contribute.
They wanted 400K for that domain name. So if you want us to have it, you need to contribute. I did ask them. It's a really shitty, web page if you go to it.
It looks like clip art, like the whole thing.
I wouldn't be Matt O'Dell if I didn't cold email them trying to get the domain.
Yeah. It reminds me of the Space Jam website.
Yeah, exactly. It's like straight 90s.
Yeah. All right. We got through it all. We're 24 minutes in and we're just getting to the list.
Where's the beef?
Where is the beef? Here it is. Our boy Ergo BTC has been warning people of an ongoing BSV dust attack. So if you've been lucky enough to receive a recent address dusting, this entity does not appear to be malicious. Users with a wallet that allows UTXO blocking should block these outputs.
So they're using it to advertise some bullshit BSV service.
They just put an op return stuff in it, or?
Yeah, there's like a message in there that tells you to. I'm not going to shill what the service is. It's bullshit.
Let's use full anonymity C memo.
Yeah, the service is memo, BSV's memo app or whatever.
Yeah.
The freaks. I just wanted the freaks to know what a dusting attack is. It's where. You're sent, and you might have seen this because this ongoing attack has been hitting anyone who recently transacts. If you transact recently, a lot of CoinJoin users have experienced it because they're coin joining often. So, they're sending a lot of transactions and their addresses are getting hit by it. The idea of a proper dusting attack, if it's not advertisement like this, is you hit wallets with... You hit known addresses with small amounts of Bitcoin, and if your wallet doesn't have coin control, if your wallet doesn't allow you to choose which, when you send a transaction, you're sending a transaction, it includes a bunch of inputs in the transaction, and if it includes, if you don't have coin control and you don't get to pick which outputs are included on the input side of your transaction, then they get combined automatically behind the scenes, and it can link multiple addresses that are in your wallet. Your wallet's really a cluster of these UTXOs that are all different addresses. So it can decrease your privacy. So we've seen surveillance companies use it as a way of doing that. And this is one of the reasons why I think all wallets should have coin control. And unfortunately, very few have it. We've talked on this podcast before about how all the Lightning implementations except for, I believe, Electrums, and I think C Lightning has it, but none of the front ends for C Lightning have supported it yet. I know RTL is working on it, have this coin control, but right now we have Electrum has coin control, Wasabi has coin control, Samurai has coin control. I know Blue Wallet's going to add it, so I really want this to happen in this space. I want to see it in as many wallets as possible, and I do understand it's a UX issue. Casa has coin control. I understand it's a UX issue. Put it as an advanced option, so that users can go into the options. And another important thing is here, just coin control alone isn't that great. You need to have a labeling ability as well.
Yeah, like a do not touch.
So you can know which UTXO it is. Like which UTXO is what. On top of that, that's what Marty just said, is Samurai, for instance, has a do not spend tag you can put on the dust. I think Samurai actually automatically, if you get dusted, will mark it do not spend. But I'm not absolutely positive on that. But if they don't, you got to go in there and you got to mark it do not spend. And that way you know it'll never get included automatically.
Yeah. And it should be noted, this is one form of a dust attack. We've actually seen the Bitcoin network attacked with dust in another form. And actually, Laurent, a good friend Laurent from the he created OXT.me, is now part of Samurai. He did heavy research about the dust attacks this summer of, I believe, 2015 and 2016, where people used dust to sort of clog up block space to drive fees higher, to potentially push
2017
narrative.
Too.
Yeah. Dust can be used maliciously in multiple ways, so just be aware. And yeah, hopefully the UX of these wallets improves to the point where you can easily identify it and avoid it, because dust, and they're literally sending the smallest amount that you can send at the protocol level, which is what, 546 sats,
because that's the dust limit. We have a dust limit in Bitcoin. And actually, Sergey Kotelar, I'm definitely pronounced his name wrong, from BitRefill, is proposed recently to raise that dust limit.
To make it more expensive of an attack?
Yeah, and the reason we call it dust is because to spend it costs more in fees than you can actually spend it.
Yeah.
Than the amount you're spending. So it's like it's not a practical amount to actually spend. Because the more inputs you have on the input side, let's say you have five UTXOs that are going into a transaction, the higher your transaction fees are.
Yeah. Be aware, freaks. Be aware. The nuances of the Bitcoin network. There's a lot of them, and this is one of them. There's a lot to dive into here, and hopefully the UX of the products built on top of the base layer will improve on this. It's still early days. If you know about these problems, you are an early adopter. Speaking of OXT.me, they put out a research report on Wasabi, an alleged Wasabi vulnerability that's out there. Again, the Samurai versus Wasabi wars continue. Matt, I will defer to you to explain what's going on here.
Okay, so OXT, which is a subset of, it's the research arm of Samurai, has reported that they've found, I believe, two vulnerabilities in Wasabi. This report is just alleging the vulnerabilities. They haven't disclosed the vulnerabilities yet. They said they disclosed them to the Wasabi team. And they supposedly, a portion of that disclosure was they gave the full disclosure to the Wasabi team and they said, we are trying to do this in a responsible way. We will give you time to fix it, but we want you to tell your users not to use the CoinJoin portion of the wallet until you fix it. Because their vulnerability supposedly your remixes don't help you is supposedly like the TLDR of the vulnerability. The summary of the vulnerability is that remixes don't help you. Your anonymity set is only as good as your last round you've done, which is not great. I mean, we have spoken on this pod many times that if you use Wasabi, you should set your default anonymity set to at least 101 so that you have at least two remixes. Because when you do the remixes, it's multiplicative. The odds of trying to unwind that CoinJoin round become way more difficult if you go into just at least one more round. But this is alleged. We don't have the actual disclosure. The disclosure is supposed to come out tomorrow. So I've been in the Wasabi chat room for the whole day, basically trying to get, you know, because there's so much toxicity in the space, in the CoinJoin arena.
Flame wars. You got the hardware flame wars, the CoinJoin flame wars, they're right. Everywhere.
I spoke to the Samurai guys, and in like their defense, they wouldn't give me any privileged information. I tried to get some privileged information. I was like, is this legit? They're like, it is legit, but we're not going to tell you shit, Matt. We're going to release the actual disclosure tomorrow if like Wasabi doesn't respond, because talks between them have completely broken down.
And really? Then when can never see that.
Yeah,
happening.
Who would have guessed? And then on the Wasabi side, we have users coming out and saying, like, this is obviously FUD from Samurai. But the thing that strikes me is the Wasabi lead maintainers know this full disclosure that Samurai has, right? So if it is bullshit, then why haven't they come out and just said it's bullshit? Like, we just need a single tweet, you know, from Nopara or David Molnar, like, this is bullshit. Like, and that tweet hasn't happened. They haven't said anything in the chat room, which strikes me as strange. So we will see tomorrow. You know, watch social media channels, watch No Bullshit Bitcoin or whatever, and see if something comes out from it. Watch OXT's Twitter account. But for now, we don't really know. We don't really know. Samurai's alleging this. We have there's no proof or anything, because they're supposed to be releasing it tomorrow. But it is weird to me that the Wasabi guys haven't come out and said, you know, it's bullshit if it is bullshit.
Prepare for a flame war on Friday. Tomorrow.
I'm not prepared.
I'm happy I'm going to be on the golf course and I'll be able to miss it. Thank God.
Smart. Make sure if you get into the middle of it with the whole Samurai Wasabi thing tomorrow, that you also at Marty. So when he's trying to putt on like the seventh hole, he like his phone's just buzzing nonstop with notifications. Just make sure you do that.
I'm a true true golfer, and I leave my phone at home with my wife and just let her go through.
Don't trust
shit.
Verify. Tag him anyway. So if he doesn't do that, then he gets hit with them.
Yeah. They go on. But you know what? We've said it before. Iron sharpens iron. Discover these vulnerabilities. Point them out, and hopefully it makes this stuff stronger. It just never seems to end. It never will end. Get used to it. It's entertaining.
We're still super early. You think we're early on Bitcoin? We're like even earlier on Bitcoin privacy.
Yes.
Like we're just so fucking early.
Yes. Ooh. Not on the list. I saw you had a little tweet thread yesterday about like the funnel of Bitcoiners and the number of, you said around 4 million, probably less, the self-custody number.
Oh, right. So
yeah.
I still have my Glassnode subscription for the freaks. Which I pay like, I think I pay like $35 a month for, which is like, it seems like a reasonable price for the service they offer, to be quite honest. So I keep paying for it, but it's important for me to get my money's worth out of it. So I, fortunately they're very good about allowing us to, a lot of these services, they not only, there's like the chain analysis of the world charge like $150,000 a year to use their service. You're not actually allowed to tweet out anything or share anything that you get from the service. So what I like to do is to get my money's worth is like, I like tweeting out the different paywalled shit that I have in there, to get my money's worth. And one of the things is addresses that hold over 1 million sats. And right now that sits at 8.5 million. So I just tweeted that out. I just sent out the chart and I was getting some shit because they were like, Matt, this isn't bullish. This isn't, you know, this. And then someone else was like, this isn't bearish. This is bullish. And they were like putting words in my mouth. And I was like, I just tweeted out a chart that said what Glassnode is reporting of how many addresses are holding the shit. And I was like, you want my conclusions? This is my conclusion. My conclusion is, my guess, and this is just a complete guess, right, is that we have like 30 to 50 million Bitcoiners, right? If there's only 8.5 million that are hold addresses that are holding over 1 million sats, that is an upper bound on the amount of Bitcoiners that are self-custodying, because it is including custodial services. And it's including people like me and you that have many, many addresses, right?
Yes.
Like, so we have many addresses. So that's that's an upper bound, but it's like a ridiculous upper bound. So we're talking in a conservative, optimistic sense that there's probably, now this where gut comes in, there's probably less than 4 million Bitcoiners that are self-custodying. 4 million people that are self-custodying Bitcoin. Like, that's not that many people. So you can look at it from two ways. It is bullish in that we are really fucking early, right? And it's bearish in the fact that Bitcoin is protest money and people aren't actually using it to protest.
Well,
very few people are using it to protest.
I would agree that very few people are using it in a self-custodial way, but I think the act of buying Bitcoin, even if it's held on an exchange, again, thinking about the user experience and the user journey, is an act of rebellion and an act of, it's a vote with your dollars that you are.
Okay.
That you are.
I don't disagree. It's definitely a protest to just buy Bitcoin. But I would say it's a bigger protest to self-custody it because it makes it more 6102 resistant.
Agreed.
Executive Order 6102 when they took people's gold by force. And then I would say it's even bigger protest to actually use your own node with it.
Agreed.
Right, which we don't have any hard numbers, which is even way less than 4 million, right? Because I got to say, out of the 4 million, probably the majority are using third-party nodes, overwhelming majority. Mostly Ledger and Trezor nodes, probably. And then from there, I would say it's an even bigger protest if you're providing CoinJoin liquidity. And that's an even tinier subset. So I just want to see people trickle down that. You said funnel. I don't like the word funnel, but I want to see people enhance the protesting of this protest money.
It's a funnel. It's a step.
Yeah.
And who popularized that?
Funnel has a bad connotation on it now.
For what?
Who popularized that?
I was going to say AJ Towns. He had a good blog post earlier this year speaking of Like the
oh yeah, that was good.
Yeah.
No, Dan Held had his marketing funnel that he did.
I was thinking of AJ.
But anyway, you can call it what you want to call it.
There's a user journey. It's going to get easier.
Absolutely.
I believe the numbers at the bottom of the funnel will only increase from here.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. I look at these numbers and I'm bullish that we're early is how I mostly interpret them. But I just want, like, Bitcoin Twitter is, and I think I said something like
you're venturing into some territory, especially considering today. Like, even though I had, like, a busy day, I caught up on that drama. We'll get to that after your comment.
I said less than 250,000 people are using their own nodes, and people were saying to me it's way less than that, and I was like, that's not my point. My it's conservatively optimistic number is what I said there, right? And I also said 50,000 people are coin joining, less than 50,000 people are coin joining, and it's significantly less than that, most likely. My point is that Bitcoin Twitter tends to live in this bubble where they think way more than 4 million people are self-custodying, way more than 250,000 people are using their own node, and way more than 50,000 people are coin joining, and it's way less than all of those numbers. So I want Bitcoiners to be more realistic about where we stand here currently. I think Bitcoin's inevitable, but we're not invulnerable. You know, we're still vulnerable here. It's still early, and we need to keep improving.
Completely agree there. And yeah, I think it'll get better over time. It has gotten better over time, I would argue. I'm just going to educate. So let's put how early we are into context. Like, how long do you think Bitcoin will survive into the future? That's a good question to ask.
Well, usually I just say forever.
Right? Well, forever is a totally fine answer. So,
at,
like,
least my lifetime. I think I will die before Bitcoin.
Oh, I think my great-grandchildren will die before Bitcoin dies.
Like, I know, but I mean, let's not talk about our grandkids' death. I mean, who knows what happens?
Obviously, but
maybe our grandkids are part of, like, the Citadel elite their life.
That's not the point. We're trying to put the context of the relative temporal earliness that we are to this asset. Like, if it is to be, like, I wouldn't be surprised if, like, 1,000 to 2,000 years. And that sounds crazy.
That's a pretty long time.
It's a very long time. So considering the fact that Bitcoin is 11 years and 8 months old, we're very, very early on that timeline. And I think
1,990 years to go.
Yeah, I think people severely misunderstand just how early it is and how different Bitcoin will be in the future.
I'd be very happy if that turns into, like, the Mayan 2012 prediction. It's like, in 2,000 years, they're like, Marty Bent predicted that Bitcoin was going to end.
It never, who knows? Who knows? After Bob McElrath hopped on a call that I was on a couple weeks ago and really made me less wary about quantum computing, he seems to not believe that it's possible.
The quantum computing Bitcoin argument is what the asteroid mining bullshit is, which is also why I was pissed off at the Winklevii, is the asteroid mining bullshit against gold.
Yeah, Hasu actually had a good point about that. Like, you have to factor in the cost to bring it back to Earth, unless you could use it, like, in orbit.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, there's a lot of reasons that gold is a shitcoin. The asteroid mining stuff is just cheap FUD. Yeah. That's what it is.
Yeah, number one reason that proves that gold is a shitcoin is Executive Order 6102. Completely destroyed the gold standard that existed for millennia. Right then and there. It's done. It's not coming back. Any gold bugs that listen to this, like, oh, we're going to go back. It's not happening. It's not happening.
You can't easily send gold to someone for telling us the block height of our first episode.
No.
Like, there's an... Without a trusted third party.
No, you cannot. That's a good point. Reminder, freaks, find that block at 50,000 sats on the line. And a shout out next week.
Whoever the freak is who got it has already done it. This reminder was unnecessary.
Speaking of sats, Strike, our boy Jimmy Mao, our boy Jack Mahlers, announced right before we hit record that Strike is adding cash back. So you'll be able to use the Strike app to get cash back. And so
it's kind of weird it's not sats back. Still bullish.
Still bullish, yeah.
I think it's like a regulatory concern. I mean, if you're using the fiat side to pay for the sats that you're sending, then it's basically the same thing anyway, right?
Yeah.
Did you see the video release that they included with it?
Yeah, they put it on Vimeo too, which is very exciting.
What? Why did they put it? Why is it exciting that it's on Vimeo instead of YouTube?
Because they're telling YouTube to fuck off. I like Vimeo.
Fair enough.
Why isn't Vimeo more popular?
Network effects.
I feel like it's the search that hinders it.
YouTube is like the second most visited website in the world behind Google. They're both owned by the same company.
Yeah, this ad's very sleek. This is what we need. Like, good design. Good, like, little 30-second spots. So you can download the Strike app, the App Store, the Google Play Store. It's available in the Chrome Web Store, too. And, hey, this is a consumer app that's getting to market. And shout out to our boy Jack for iterating on the product.
So if you're a freak who's been living under a rock, or you're just joining us now for your first episode, if you are, welcome. Strike allows you to pay any Lightning invoice with a bank account or a connected debit card. So if you go to BitcoinDevList.com, there's a bunch of Bitcoin developers there that have the ability to donate via Lightning. So if you have Strike, you can go rain some sats on them. That'd be great.
I loved your response to James Presswitz today. Bitcoin Dev Day is destroyed. Should we touch on this? Like, I feel like we should.
Was he subtweeting Corallo's tweet?
I think he was agreeing. And it was a...
Can agree via subtweet,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I believe that was a subtweet of Matt's tweet. The other Matt, Matt Corallo. Another Matt, not the other Matt.
It's the Matt.
Then your
response,
secondary
Matt.
Bitcoin Dev Days created. That's the one thing I wanted to point out, is that tweet. That's the beauty. As I've begin sponsoring more devs via the site that you created, thank you very much for that.
It's just, shout out Dennis Ryman.
Shout out Dennis too. It's just really cool. Like, the dev will DM you or tweet at you and say, hey, thank you for supporting me. And that's what anybody is out there who is not a developer, and like these people working on Bitcoin, this open source repository or multiple repositories, whether it be Libitcoin, Bitcoin Knots,
Bitcoin
Core.
Yeah, we include non-core devs on the site.
Yeah.
If you're just working on Bitcoin development, whether that's in UX or actual, you know, code, whatever it is, like, submit a pull request on our GitHub repo and I'll get you added on there.
Yeah. These people are building out the future of liberty via Bitcoin, and a lot of them are doing it for nothing. And so the ability to be able to support them as easily as you can via BitcoinDevList.com it's incredible. And I feel great that I'm able to give back to these people who have contributed to something that's... This podcast wouldn't exist without Bitcoin. The newsletter wouldn't exist without Bitcoin. The company I work for would not
exist. All it takes is one sat, and you've contributed more to Bitcoin development than Coinbase.
This is true. But with that being said, like, I thought the whole drama today was like a little overblown. I think people very highly over index how much influence Bitcoin Twitter has.
I love Matt, but I feel like he woke up on the wrong side of the bed today.
Yeah, I love...
Sorry.
Matt, I love you too. Matt is
huge friend of the podcast.
He's actually
had him on many times.
He's the most tenured guest on this podcast.
But yeah, that was... I mean, I
maybe
think
we'll,
that
maybe
is
we'll
like,
have, maybe we'll have to have him on to get his perspective. Maybe
we'll have him on. We've been due for another Corallo episode, but that... Basically, his tweet was was that Bitcoin Twitter is so toxic that it pushes people to shitcoins, which is like the ultimate shitcoiner excuse. It's like we hear that all the time. You know, Vitalik has used that excuse himself for why he started Ethereum.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, can get toxic, can get...
But it's also loving.
Yeah. It's a meritocracy. It's, again, iron sharpens iron. A lot of people don't like the bullshit out there. Again, I'm not a big... I don't like a lot of bullshit either. So sometimes I appreciate it. I may not agree with the tone or the execution of the criticism, but appreciate the criticism, you know?
Look, skin in the game, practice what you preach, right? This podcast, we shill projects... with, like, projects that aren't sponsors of this podcast, we shill them a shit ton, right? If we think it's an important project, if we think a dev is working on something really important, we shill it almost more than we do our sponsors. Like, don't tell the sponsors, but, like, we do that because we love Bitcoin.
We love our sponsors, too.
Absolutely. But we shill the shit out of stuff, you know? And it, that kind of part of the Bitcoin community, I, like, fucking love. Like, people get around. They, like, I don't know. Like, there, it's, it definitely felt a little bit strawman-y, you know?
Yes. Yes, I do know. And Matt, if you're listening to this, the Blue Matt, let's chat. I want to hear your side. Elaborate on your side if you're open to it.
I think he would love to elaborate on it.
Yeah.
We'll have you on again.
You have an open invite whenever you want to come. Just DM us.
It has to be in person, though.
Ooh. It's harder with COVID, man. Who knows?
It doesn't have to be in person, but I prefer if it was in person, Matt.
I do, too. I like drinking IPAs with you. Next on the list, hash rate hit an all-time high, and then Sichuan province in China experienced some flooding. And there were some videos, again, must preface this with the disclaimer that any information or...
I don't trust any of these videos, by yeah, the way.
Yeah, right. Any data coming out of China is hard to verify.
Any data coming out of anywhere is hard to fucking verify.
Especially China, though. But Thomas Heller, who's part of F2 Pool... So this is data you can verify, is the fact that overall hash rate on mining pools that cater to Chinese miners did fall pretty significantly earlier this week. It is being attributed to the rainfall in Sichuan province, which is west of Hubei province, where Wuhan is and the Three Gorges Dam is. And so the floods are basically being attributed to the fall temporary fall in hash rate as...
But it rebounded.
Yeah, it did rebound. I saw that SIPA chart tweet earlier that you put out.
I kind of got into it with you and Barbara. I love you both. You know I love you both.
I know.
I just... Lower your time preference a little bit.
The Paswan. No, but as miners, we're like, oh. Not that
we... Did you see what I said when I posted the chart? Barber posted, he was like, yeah, it looks like the flood subsided. I was like, either that or you guys have been putting in work.
Yeah.
Well, that's... like, we, you have to remember, we also hit all-time high, right? And then the price cratered a bit, right? So there's definitely some element
the
there
price
as
didn't
well
crater,
right?
The price fell like $800 after like a $2,000.
Yeah, I know. I shame on me for saying cratered, because it didn't. I kept seeing on Twitter, like, buy the dip. Like, oh, you sold the dip or whatever. And then I kept checking the price because I was like, did it fall? Like, what happened?
The question I have would be, if hash rate did fall and there were people with old S9s sitting on the sidelines that were being very attentive to that may have turned them back on, that could have...
I heard anecdotes about that. Did you hear anecdotes about that?
I've heard some murmuring in back channels, yeah.
Yeah, I had someone reach out to me who has miners hosted in Sichuan, who was like, then they turned on miners somewhere else that was like older hardware.
Yeah, yeah.
And I said to him, I was like, not your miners. Not your keys, not your coins, but like, yeah, I'm not very bullish on the idea of hosting miners with someone else specifically in another country. Yeah. Especially, you know, across the world where you can't even see what the fuck's going on. So I don't know about that, but yeah. I did hear that.
Yeah. And I wouldn't be surprised if that did happen.
But if you had old S9s and the price goes down a little bit and you're like, because here's the thing, is like,
we have to weigh it with that hash rate drop too. Like, there's a formula to it. Like,
right. But people are emotional, right? So when we were at 12,300, people were like, hyper Bitcoinization's upon us. And then you drop $600. And so in that situation, they might be like, we are willing to mine at a loss because we're going to HODL just for a little bit because hyper Bitcoinization's upon us and we can wait. And then you drop just $600. And then you say to yourself, you know, we're going to $3,000 because yeah. People are just emotional beings. And so that definitely, it's not just a pure math equation. There's definitely the gambler's dilemma is mixed in there.
Definitely agree with that. And beyond the impact of this flooding on mining, again, hard to verify any of this data, but apparently the Three Gorges Dam, because again, Sichuan province is to the west of Huebei, where the Three Gorges Dam is, and actually I'm not sure if it's in Huebei, whatever. Sichuan is west of the dam, and so that's upstream.
Somewhere in China.
It's upstream, and all of this water is flowing downstream towards the dam, and there were reports, I believe the Financial Times reported on it today, that the Three Gorges Dam is at the highest limit that it's ever reached at some point in the last few days. And there's been a bunch of videos of a bunch of flooding, again, hard to verify.
So but you've had some bents about the Three Gorges Dam failing.
Yeah.
Do you want to make a bet on it failing?
No, I don't want to make a bet on that. There's too many lives at stake. I never want to bet on that.
I'm such a gambler. Stay humble, Matt. I just, you know, I'd be willing to bet that it doesn't fail in the next 6 months.
I hope not. I can't say for sure. I don't know. Yeah.
It'd be bullish for Bitcoin if it did.
I don't know. I think there's a good argument to be made that if it fucks up the supply chain in China enough, it could put the mining industry back a considerable amount. Who knows if that, yeah, it could be a black swan for Bitcoin.
I tend to gravitate towards, is it bullish for Bitcoin? Yes, it's bullish for Bitcoin. Like, yeah. Just whatever you insert there, is this bullish for Bitcoin? Yes, it's bullish for Bitcoin.
Yeah. No, I mean, I hope to God it doesn't break. No, it's, I mean, you could go a dark corner of conversation. Like, would that, like, no, you don't want
to diversify mining more.
Like, I'm taking this beyond mining into, like, the CCP level. Like, would it destroy the CCP?
No, Marty. You want to bet on that?
The mandate from heaven, dude. People bring it up. No, I don't want to bet. I don't want to bet on people's lives. Not going to happen. I don't want to bet on people's lives.
A dam breaking is not going to stop the CCP.
But a dam breaking in conjunction with a...
No, it's not
epidemic with a locust outbreak.
Hopium.
We'll see.
This is hopium, Marty.
We shall see. We're not going to bet on them. Regardless, there's flooding in China. Apparently, miners in Sichuan.
I will bet on anything.
Have been flooded out. It'll be interesting to see what happens to the Three Gorges Dam. There's reports that it is weakening. We will keep you freaks updated as the story unfolds. Hopefully, the rainy season ends, but I think they have like two more typhoons headed their way at least in the next month, which is not ideal.
That hurricane that hit us was pretty hard early on in the season, too. Talking about typhoons.
Dude, there was a tornado that hit the island that I'm on.
Oh, and the derecho, which I never knew was a term.
Derecho in Iowa.
Iowa and the Midwest. It even hit parts of Chicago.
It's like an inland hurricane, like winds. And apparently, they're still being affected by it. Like power,
it
people are still out
of
power.
Fucked them up hard.
Yeah.
I spoke to some Iowan Bitcoiners. We have a very strong clan out in Iowa, and they got hit. They got hit pretty fucking hard, man. And no one's really talking about it.
No. Shout out to Chris Stewart. I know you're not in Iowa. You're in Chicago, but a strong Iowan. I've been in contact with my Chicago friends. It's not terrible there. It was a little startling, but nothing too crazy.
Yeah, they like freaked a little bit. Yeah. But like Iowa got hit hard, man. Yeah.
That's crazy. We got wildfires in California now. My sister's in Colorado. She was telling me that they have wildfires. What the hell's going on?
The worst part about the wildfires now is like everyone who donated their N95 masks for the COVID shit don't have it for the wildfires.
Ugh.
Which is like kind of crazy that production hasn't scaled up there.
That is,
but
is
that's
that,
just a whole nother.
Have there been reported supply shortages?
Yeah, there's still. I mean, look, try and buy N95 masks.
Yeah, shit.
Back that to, one you can verify very easily. Yeah. Just try and buy some.
Just go on Amazon. Tor released a statement on the recent exit node attacks, stripping the SS or the HTTPS.
Basically everything we knew, but we're just going to link to the official Tor statement on it.
Yeah.
We've already discussed this pretty in depth.
But then they also released another blog on how to stop the Onion denial service attack as well.
Which is separate.
Yes. What's going
so
on here?
This is... We've seen this hitting the dark net markets, and also if you use anything that's on your, like within the Tor network, connecting to your node using Onion, or if you run your Lightning node through Tor only, we've noticed slowdowns and denial of service attacks, and the dark net markets have been getting hit super hard. And one of the issues is like we've talked about the failure of incentives of Tor. Like the way you mitigate denial of service attacks on ClearNet, on regular internet, is basically centralization. You'd start banning IP addresses, and you have these big denial of service providers, like Cloudflare and Akamai, definitely pronounced that wrong, that
well, we don't have that on the list, but we have Cloudflare on the top of mind. We're going to talk about something after this. Noted.
Okay, I'll remind you. So Tor is grappling with how they can deal with this without like implementing like KYC or something like that. And they proposed two ideas. One is anonymous tokens, which before you all get triggered, does not mean like blockchain tokens. They're just anonymous.
Tokens?
Yeah, authentication tokens that are anonymous that are served to good peers, so that if you're a bad peer, you run out of them really quickly if you do kind of denial of service, which is interesting. But the thing that Bitcoiners would find, I think, really interesting is that they're contemplating adding a proof of work element, which like I thought was pretty cool.
Like a hash cash based or...
Yeah, like this idea that to do any kind of calls on the network, you're doing a little bit of work.
Will there be a difficulty adjustment?
No, there's no difficulty adjustment. But it's an interesting blog post. Anyone who relies on Tor should give it a read. I'm not sure. I dig where their head's at. You know, this is the right direction. You know, the guy who disclosed the exit node vulnerabilities was like, we should just KYC all mailing addresses of exit nodes. I was like, no, that's a non-starter for me. Like, I think this is like the more the correct direction where you want to go towards. Though these are separate issues, but these are the type of thought processes that you should be going through.
Yes, and if you want
for
to,
something like Tor,
if you want to contribute to better thought processes, you can go to cypherpunklabs.com, which allows you to easily fund Tor nodes.
So have you checked this out?
Yeah, it's pretty dope.
So our boy NixOps is running this. So I said last episode, I'm not going to ask you to run exit nodes because they have massive liability. He has gone through the legal trouble and whatnot of getting providers that will allow him to run exit nodes. So you can run a relay node, an entry node, which they call guard nodes, or an exit node, and it costs $10 and you can pay with Bitcoin. The main issue with a service like this is that he's running them, right? So he's willing to provide some level of auditability, but there's always going to be trust involved there. Like, are you funding a malicious actor? I personally like this dude. I think he's a good dude, but like, take that as you will, you know, like don't, you know, we're, don't trust Verify, you're stuck kind of in a loop here. But I think that, like, if we support his service, he wants to have 100 exit nodes up and running. I think it makes a significant improvement to the network. So I personally am supporting it. I think other freaks should support it as well. So go check it out, cypherpunklabs.com.
Yeah, and support his Bitcoin work too. We talked about it a few episodes ago, but what he's doing for the Bitcoin stack above the protocol level to sort of reduce dependencies is pretty huge too.
Wait, this is, what are you talking about, Nick's Bitcoin?
Yeah.
This is different.
Oh, it's different?
His name is Nick's Ops.
I thought it was the same person.
I don't think so. I don't think he's involved with Nick's Bitcoin.
Oh. Well, anyway, Nick's Bitcoin's pretty tube too. Check it out if you haven't. I think they were the same person. I could have
maybe I might be wrong. I might be incorrect. But either way, I think I think he means well. I think this is in the right positioning, and I do like that you can support and basically sponsor an exit node without taking that liability on yourself by paying with Bitcoin.
Yeah. All right. This is the last topic before we get to software updates, which we'll blow through because we're already an hour and 5 minutes in. But it's probably a topic we'll talk about for a little bit. RIP BitMEX. They're adding KYC.
Oof.
Most cypherpunk app to hit the Bitcoin markets, particularly financial-based, to date is bending the knee. I guess the Seychelles, whatever you call it, is
Seychelles.
The Seychelles is not enough to protect Arthur and crew from the long reach of KYC AML compliance. Are you pouring some out right now?
Pouring some out for the homies. Look, I think it was inevitable. We knew it was coming. You know,
it hurts to see. It hurts to see.
Yeah, I think there'll be competing bucket shops that will come out.
There always are.
Yeah, that aren't KYC for a bit. I always thought they ran a good one. I do appreciate that they're basically giving all their users advance notice before they do it, which is strictly more admirable.
Class act.
Yeah, than like doing like shotgun KYC on people. Like you can't withdraw unless you do KYC. So
Binance has been known to do that.
Yeah, a lot of services have done that. So props to them for not doing that. And yeah.
And beyond
KYC is dangerous. You guys know. Guys know the spiel.
But beyond that, BitMEX, I mean, they're good actors in Bitcoin. They're supporting core devs. Their research blog does incredible work.
I like that they allow you to speculate on shitcoins without ever owning any shitcoins.
Yes, yes.
You can short them, you can long them, you can do all your degenerate behavior, and the unit of account and everything, the medium of exchange, is Bitcoin.
Yeah, and so the U.S. users... No more using a VPN to get access to this. You're going to have to show a license or something, I imagine.
Well, that's what it is. It's the long arm of the U.S. government because U.S. users were not allowed to use that, yes. BitMEX. But there was no way to really prove they weren't just using a VPN unless you do KYC. And BitMEX was kind of just turning a blind eye unless you were someone like Tone Vase who streamed it or like posted your ref link.
One of the funniest moments in Bitcoin content history. Tone Vase is just getting his BitMEX account yanked because he was live streaming perp swaps.
But there is a learning experience here, which is this is why trusted third parties are such an issue, is because U.S. financial regulation extends everywhere. It doesn't matter where you're based. And if there's someone they can squeeze, especially someone who's very rich and has a lot to lose, like they're going to squeeze them and that person is going to inevitably comply eventually.
Yeah, how much does that insurance fund have?
So much. Way too much.
Yeah.
A little decrease now.
Yeah.
Or it won't increase at least.
Well.
As much.
Let's give a shout out to Arthur Hayes and crew for what they accomplished before they got stuffed with the long dick of the law, the U.S. law particularly. Never used it, but heard a lot of people who loved it.
Never. I heard that if you send Bitcoin in, you just never withdrew because you just lost it.
Yeah,
all.
It was in and gone. Is this like a signal that Bitcoin's losing its cypherpunk lust, or are we?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't be so quick to put a cypherpunk label on them, but it was definitely like anarchist and rebellious.
Yeah, cypherpunk. You're allowed to send Bitcoin and lever it up, and then get Bitcoin out.
Look, I think this is just the cycle. They just lasted longer than the use. You know, usually, and like this is what people, like in Dex land of Ethereum mist, is, I think a lot of them thought like the beauty of a Dex is non-custodial. That's not the key. The key is no KYC, right? So you saw it with MintPal, you saw it with Cripsy before MintPal. You saw it with Bitfinex. You saw it with Polo. You saw it with Bittrex.
Yeah.
All of them, like the number one place, Binance, the number one place to trade, and obviously BitMEX, is the ones without KYC. And what happens is they get too big, and they have a lot to lose, and eventually regulators catch up to them, and then someone else comes out. And like the beauty of something like Bitcoin is that it allows the competition to easily launch a service in some random ass jurisdiction and start gaining steam, right? Especially when you have all these different questionable stable coins, you know, quote unquote stable coins like Tether, that allow you to have some kind of quasi access to USD without any kind of banking relationship. So we will probably see a new usurper come up for this cycle that is like the prominent way to go, and most people will say like, oh, they'll never be stopped, you know, because that's, you know, how Twitter always is. Yeah. But they will be, and then a new one will come. That's just how it is.
It's the cycle
of
life.
Just keep stacking sats.
True, that's the best way. Just keep head down, stack sats, stay humble. We're transitioning.
Humble or be humbled.
Right, we're transitioning into the software update. I don't see anything particularly that I want to stop and point out at, but I will defer to you. Where should I stop on this list of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5,
well,
6
Spectre
updates?
Is the first one.
Yeah.
Spectre v0.6.1. The big thing is they actually are providing binaries now.
Ooh.
So you can just easily install it.
Hell yeah.
And I think Spectre is, and we also have the Lily Wallet update there. I think Spectre and Lily Wallet are they're both very promising multi-sig ways for you to do multi-sig on your own. Spectre is probably the most promising way, as much as I love Kevin. So both of them combined, I think, are extremely bullish. So you should definitely go check them both out.
Yes, and if you're already running their software, the latest versions are... Spectre is version 0.6.1. Lilywatt is version 1.0.0. It's a major release. Also, if you're running my node, version 0.2.14 has been released. Our good friend Evan Kaloudis and the open source team behind him have released version 0.3.1 of the Zeus wallet, BTC Pay server. We all know and love. Shout out to them for their 3-year birthday earlier this week. 3-year anniversary of the Nicolas Dorier tweet against BitPay. Fuck BitPay. BTC Pay server version 1.0.5.5 is out. If you're running LND, version 0.11 beta is out. Is this coming with Jump Wumbo channels, actually? Is something we should probably talk about.
Yeah, so that's also a big one. Yeah. They're removing the 0.1677, the 16 million sat limit on channels by default has been removed.
Yes.
Which is massive.
Wumbo is here. And if you listen to the...
They also have a new backup method that it's experimental, which I think is a pretty big deal. Because right now, the static channel backups, if you have to use them, you have to close all your channels, which fucking blows. Like, imagine you spent like 4 years, 5 years, like channel management and shit, and you have hardware failure, and like the only way to get your funds is if you just close everything you've fucking done. Yeah. So I think new backups, that's a big one.
Yeah. So again, version 0.11. Wumbo channel is huge. If you guys listened to the episode we did with Alex and Andrew from River yesterday, we talked about that for quite a bit, and that's a pretty huge upgrade. And then like it brings a lot of questions with it too, like how much How many sats are you willing to risk in a channel? And how do you distribute that risk if you're a service? I thought Alex had some pretty cool ideas, unique ideas. Again, don't know if I'm fully comfortable with them, but interesting to see. The one idea, if you guys haven't listened to the podcast yet, was distributing risk with users of your service by having them put up sats to put at stake to run a hot, essentially a hot wallet or a Lightning node, and they would be able to they would be able to get the upside,
share the risk and the reward.
Yes, exactly. So the reward would be
it's custodial fees. Staking is what it is.
Exactly. It all comes back to Bitcoin, bitches. That's it for the updates. Schnorr, our good friend at Shortbits, Ben the Carman, I know you're in my DMs about next week at BitBlock Boom. Yes, we will do an interview. I want to talk with you. I have not responded yet. I'm responding right now.
I'm joining for that.
Yes, you are. But Shortbits has been doing a Schnorr Explainer series. We're going to link to that. Go read it. Obviously, Bip Taproot, which includes Schnorr, which I believe is Bip 340. Is something many people are waiting for. So if you want to learn more about it and you're relatively new or haven't read up on Schnorr, the boss team at Shortbits is doing an introduction to Schnorr signatures.
It is a 3-part series so far, and I think they're adding more parts, so go check it out.
Yeah, all their series are good. Like, if you're interested, like discrete lock contracts, I don't know why they're always in my mind, like, this is a killer app for Bitcoin second layer. They have an incredible series on that. Shout out to Nadav Cohen for putting a lot of work in on DLCs at Shortbits. And shout out to Chris Stewart, who I already mentioned, our friend from Iowa living in Chicago, for putting that team together. A very underscored team in the Bitcoin world. It's Raspi Blitz. They were on the Bitcoin Magazine stream earlier this week.
3 hours of Raspi Blitz content on the Bitcoin Mag stream. So go check that out.
Yeah, good. Go check it.
Still my favorite node implementation.
I saw you. Have you been running Ronin Dojo on Raspi Blitz or separately?
Oh, no. So I'm running that separately now. Okay. I'm playing around with Ronin. I'm playing around with their new release, which isn't out yet, which has a companion desktop app, which is baller as fuck.
Boss. Shout out to our...
I just want to say that every wallet... I just want every wallet to be able to connect to your own node through Tor by just scanning a QR code. And that's, you know, one of the beauties of the Dojo stack is that you can just scan a QR code, just connects through Tor. That's it. You're using your own fucking node.
UX, baby. It's important. Don't sleep on UX. Yeah, this is something I want to bring up, just being in the mining industry. Lancium, which is a... what I would consider a pretty subpar mining company, is suing Layer 1 for patent infringement. And they're claiming that Layer 1's infringing on their patent on basically energy load, grid load system manipulations. And so basically, like, Layer 1 is deciding when it is economical to mine Bitcoin versus sell wind energy to the grid. And these technologies that determine whether or not you should do something like mining Bitcoin, an example would be aluminum smelting, which has been around for decades, or sell that energy to the grid, and how to control that distribution of load from the grid and the activity that you're engaged in has been around for decades. Can't say too much at this point, but I think... there is enough prior art within the Bitcoin mining space to make it so this patent infringement lawsuit gets thrown out the door.
It's a patent troll.
Yeah, it's a patent troll.
This is Alexander Ligel's company. Did I pronounce his name right?
Ligel, yeah.
Ligel, that Peter Thiel invested in.
Yeah, so they're basically using Bitcoin mining as a load as a service for... wind energy farms down there. So
in Texas,
yeah, in West Texas. So
the thing about software patents, this is what this is. It's a software patent they're getting out.
Yeah, and it's a software patent on an open source like grid system that everybody's been exposed to for like 3 decades or something like that.
The software patent system in America is fucked up. Like, all you have to do is some schmuck can just put together like a flow chart with like little bubbles that's like energy happens and then you don't release energy and you just, you don't even need any code. You just, you provide this flow chart and then you have the software patent. Yeah. Like it's a fucked up system. It's held back software in globally, but especially in America for years. It's just a fucked up system.
Yeah. It's anti-competitive. It's anti-innovation. And it's,
it just hurts people.
It's middleman activity. And especially in this industry, it's like, fuck off with how early we are. That's all I'll say.
I'll always remember Apple, the swipe to unlock. Like they patented that shit.
Right.
Like, fuck you. Just like a pinch to zoom.
Right. It's like just intuitive. Like if you're not going to have a keyboard, like this is what you would expect.
No code. Just a couple bubbles. Good. You got the software patent.
It's fucked. Matt's favorite company, BlackFi, has raised $50 million in a Series A C round.
But see, like, this is what a good dude I am. Like, I had to put them in the list, even though I despise the rehypothecation as a service.
Hey, I wanted this to be clear. I love Zach Prince. He's been on this podcast a couple times.
Seems like a good dude.
He is a good dude. He's a great dude.
He is a good dude. But $400 million valuation on this company.
Dude, who knows? I mean, they're getting a lot of... Hey, you may not like it, but people are using their service.
I'm not shitting on the valuation. The valuation doesn't not make sense.
It's not personally in my risk appetite, but that's me. Like, other people have different risk appetites, and they're willing to risk it for BlockFi services. They're doing it. And
I think they're onto something. I think people want the 6-8% or whatever they're getting on their Bitcoin. I know Binance is offering it. I know Coinbase is about to offer it. We talked about this in the River podcast. It still rubs me the wrong way that they did not only how they handled the leak of customer data, but the fact that they are lending out this money. So you have to trust them on that. So it's additional custodial risk. But that they required facial scans to get your money after the personal attack, after their data leaked. Right. So,
well, let's put it into context. They're based in New York. They probably have a bit license and it's probably being forced upon them.
I mean, much pushback.
They could have done the disclosure much better. I agree. But the information they need to gather may be a product of the regulatory environment in New York State.
I think they're supporting a lot of shit coins, and if you're going to push back against that, like, you should push back for user privacy at the same time.
Yeah. And it was funny. They were, they sponsored the post where Portnoy was pumping and dumping coins.
They're his sponsor now. Well, Gemini, they use Gemini as their back end. They're going after Coinbase. They use Gemini as their back end. Gemini just invested in this round as well. Or maybe not Gemini, but the Winklevi did. Maybe the Winklevi did individually.
Yeah. I know Pomp was an investor, I think, through
Morgan Creek.
Yeah.
Which is Pomp's firm.
Yeah.
Invested.
And that's, I mean, this is an open source system. May not be in your risk appetite. May not agree.
I mean, they're definitely not open source, but they're definitely part of the permissionless aspect.
Exactly.
Yeah. If you want to use BlockFi, use BlockFi, but you're a fucking idiot if you do. That's my nicest way of saying it. I'm trying to be nice. This is me trying to be nice.
I'll take that. I would say it's not my risk appetite. I'm not going to tell anybody else. Hey, who knows? Many people have pulled sats off there, made some money. Who knows?
Marty told you that Bitcoin is going to last for 2,000 years and you're going to try and get 6% in the meantime. Are you fucking kidding me?
Hey, not something I'm willing to do, but we'll see. Crypto Voices wrote about it in the newsletter today. Sorry, it was a late newsletter. Had a busy Thursday. They've been doing an incredible job of gathering and disseminating data of the global base monies that exist and how much there is floating around the world right now. Obviously, the second quarter of 2020 had a lot of central banks around the world printing a lot of money as the COVID pandemic swept the world and the lockdown swept the world and economies were shut down. I highly recommend you go check out the thread that they wrote. It is incredibly illuminating just to see how detached the global monetary system is from any anchor of value, whether it be a hard asset like gold or silver or something like Bitcoin. The amount of money that's been printed ex nihilo over the last 50 years is pretty astonishing. And shout out to Matty Mazinkius and Fernando Ulrich for, it's hard work to gather all the data that they do. So they go in and sort of dissect the balance sheets of central banks and governments around the world and add up how much total base money there is around the world denominated in U.S. dollars. So I believe right now...
they are awesome.
They really are. So right now...
Every time I think of them, I just think of the dinner they hosted in Latvia. Such a good dinner.
Yeah. I did not make that one, but it's a sore subject. Right now, there's $23.7 trillion of base money right now, I believe. Gold is the number one. Even though it's not used as a base money, if you're going to pretend that it is used as a base money, it would be the number one base money in the world. Silver is somewhere far down the list. Bitcoin's number 12 right now, which is pretty surprising. Bitcoin, number 12 as a base money with gold included, number... with gold and silver included, number 10 without them included. It wasn't on the list until 2016, at which point it joined the list at number 31. So the fact it has been higher, I believe it was at 11 in 2017 when we had the crazy bull market. But right now it's hovering around 12. And I think that's bullish. Like, the Bitcoin's on the stage. It is considered a base money asset that... that people are willing to get into it. And thinking about the market cap of Bitcoin compared to the other base monies in front of it and the potential upside, especially if you go into another bull market, it is not hard to fathom that Bitcoin will climb this list.
So I'm looking at the chart right now. Japan is number two.
Behind gold.
Right. And the United States is number three. And EU is number four, and China is number five. Why is Japan, like, how does that make sense that Japan is number two? I don't understand. Like, how does that, do you have any insight here?
They started their QE in the 90s. So Japan's been printing money for three decades now, or the US.
But it's total valuation?
It's total valuation in US dollar terms.
So the amount of yen is worth more than the dollar.
No, there are more
market cap.
The yen denominated in U.S. dollar market cap, yes, has a bigger free flow. But take that with a grain of salt.
But then why are we denominating U.S. dollars in yen? Why are we denominating yen in U.S. dollars? You understand what I'm saying?
Because you don't buy oil in yen. You buy it in dollars. You use the petro.
Like, why isn't yen the global reserve currency if they're number two?
Because people aren't... Like, the yen has been printed and pushed in, like, the Bank of Japan and 75% of their ETF market, or 90% of their ETF market, something like 75% of their stock market. And so that's where those dollar-denominated yen are living. They're not permeating throughout the global economy. They're getting pushed right into those equity indices.
The Japanese should just buy USDC from Coinbase. And they should put it in BlockFi, and then they can get 8% interest or whatever it is.
Hey.
I just want to say, with BlockFi, I just wish, like, I would give them less shit if they just explain the trade-offs better. Like, I feel like a new user doesn't understand the trade-offs, so I have to scream my head off to try and get through to those new users so they know about the trade-offs. If the trade-offs were just clearly obvious to the new user, then I wouldn't have to say shit. I could just... keep my fucking mouth quiet.
Hey, you keep that mouth quiet over there. All right, we don't need you starting shit.
I will not shut up.
I know. Nor should you ever. Don't ever listen to me. Speak your mind. This is a game of individuals. Welcome to the realm. This has been a great episode of Rabbit Hole Recap. I had to go prepare for my dinner. Do you have anything you want to end it on, Matt?
Stay humble, stack sats.
P. peace and love.